Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yes, we are back. Welcome to another Tuesday Night Jaw Roundtable on the Distraction Pieces Network. I am your host, Jim Smallman. I have some guests in this front room in Manchester. We'll get to that in a minute. I need to do some plugs first. First of all, listen to everything on the Distraction Pieces Network because it's all dead good. All of it. It's really good. Often a lot better than this podcast. So listen to everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. It's all gravy, as I believe the children are saying. I've got some plugs. ProgressWrestling.com. Maybe come to Super Strong Style 16 this weekend if you fancy it. Because we're in a massive venue, Alexandra Palace, we'll have twice as many people in the audience as we've ever had for a Super Strong Style 16 before, which is great. But it's a big venue, so there's still tickets available. ProgressWrestling.com for this Saturday, Sunday and Bank Holiday Monday. Quite a lot of good wrestling. We've announced the first round draw now, which is all very exciting. And there's some cool non-tournament matches like Travis Banks defending the Progress Wrestling Championship against Volta on day two. And loads of great stuff. I know what we've got planned for the 3 days and it's all great. And there's entertainment after the Saturday and Sunday shows as well, including a gig from Mark Andrews Band Jr. on the Sunday. So basically, it's an exciting weekend. Come to that. Or come to Victoria Warehouse in Manchester on May the 20th. Or come to Wembley Arena on September the 30th. ProgressWrestling.com for tickets and merchandise. Demand-progress.com for all of our shows, including our two New Orleans shows. Yeah, we know there's no commentary on them. We broke the commentary. And soon our visits to Australia will be up. And Travis Banks' title defence in New Zealand is up as well, which was basically in the South Pole. Invercargill is very, very south New Zealand.
What you need is an old penguin lumberjack match.
I mean, there was a possibility to do that.
That would have been amazing.
When I realised we were less than 3,000 miles away from the actual South Pole, I realised how far away I was from home. We'll come to that in a minute.
You should have booked AJ Styles and just, you know, taken him to the edge.
Get out. My other plug is this. I've got a book coming out. I announced it today. It's already in the top 100 on Amazon, which is mental. It's the number one book in wrestling at the minute on Amazon. That's mental. It's the number one mover and shaker, as I say this. That's basically the most new sales in a day. Thanks to you lot, mainly. Look, I've got to do this. If it sells well, I can afford to feed my children, okay? You can abuse me all you want. You two fuckers help with it.
It's not a deal. You know? No, are we accredited to this?
Yes, both
Shit.
Of you.
Damn, we're accountable.
Especially Christopher. Christopher's mentioned a few times, and then you're both mentioning my thanks at the start of the book.
I'm responsible for all of this mess in some way.
Yeah. I actually use the words, it's Chris Brooker's fault.
Do you know what? I was looking forward to showing this book to my parents, and now I know they'll identify with it even more. So it works out quite nicely. It's basically like me handing them my school report. Because you know, I've just gone with the classic... He's clever, but he never applies himself.
Yeah, which was every school report ever. Or he's not here. We think he's on drugs. So that
but
was
in fairness,
one of mine.
You're winning on aggregate now.
I am.
Because none of those guys who weren't on drugs have got books out, have they?
I mean, some of them probably have got better books out because they are on drugs. It's like all good music. I mean, I'm straight edge, but all good music is written by people on drugs, right? Mm-hmm.
Was Phil Collins on drugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, tons of coke, mate. It was the 1980s.
Oh, yeah, that's true enough.
Anyway, My book is called I'm Sorry I Love You, A History of Professional Wrestling. As I pointed out to someone earlier on, it's a history of professional wrestling, not the history of professional wrestling. Therefore, it's a fun book aimed at fun rather than a strict textbook where I detail every match result in the history of time. I've not done that. I've written 120,000 words about something I really like, so maybe buy it. It'd be mad because pre-orders all count towards the first week of sales. And if I get... They've told me a mythical figure that I need to try and get at to get in the top 10. If somehow a book about professional wrestling that's not written by a wrestler gets in the top 10 non-fiction bestsellers, not only will I be a best-selling author, which is mental and something every teacher told me I would never achieve at school and university.
How do you know you were never there?
But also, it's mad that Headline, who are my publishers, are a proper massive... really big publishing house, and the fact that they are publishing a book about professional wrestling in a really positive way, because it's dead positive like this podcast, so the fact they're publishing a book about wrestling is really, really cool, and wrestling in 2018, etc. So get behind it and buy it, and if we get in the top 10, I'll buy you all a cream puff. I don't know if you can buy them.
Yeah, you can, but why? You're just rubbing it in Matt's face now, aren't you?
Why?
I mean, that's the reason why.
Gluten.
It's pastry, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, mate. I mean, I can't have one because dairy.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. So, but the advantage being that if you do crack the top 10 non-fiction bestsellers, you might knock Jamie Oliver out of the top 10.
Oh, now I'll buy it.
Also, the coolest thing that happened to me today was Waterstones Birmingham, who have their own Twitter.
I saw this. Yeah, yeah.
Tweeted me going, "Are you doing a book signing?" I'm like, "I've just announced it." I mean, I have to do PR around the time the book comes out, which is August the 23rd. Mm-hmm. Either before or after it comes out, they've not worked out when I'm doing it yet. So there probably will be a book tour, and because I wrote a stand-up show in February that was all right, I might end up doing a stand-up tour off of it. I don't know yet. I'm just happy that people seem universally really chuffed for me writing a book. Like, I know you're not because you're a prick, Matthew, right? But everyone else seems really, really, really pleased. And that is genuinely humbling. I've spent all of today smiling at people's nice messages that they've sent me. So thanks. I'm really grateful. If you choose to buy the book, brilliant. If you just choose to tell people about the book, that's great too. Thanks
very
much.
And you can pirate Kindle.
You can't fuck off. You can't pirate Kindle.
There's got to be a way.
I'll tweet out a torrent link. Don't worry.
Sweet.
Got you. I've got a rough draft anyway. I'll hook you up.
If anyone wants a PDF,
yeah.
Just slide into my DMs.
Yeah, you got it.
I hate you both at this point.
I had to tell him to spell Fit Finley correctly twice.
There you go. That's
welcome, Dave.
That's behind the curtain, isn't it?
I had to remind him
that was
about...
your own, and that's the best bit. The only feedback of the section I gave you was your feedback was it's dead good. You've spelt Finley wrong twice.
Yeah,
that was your feedback.
Yeah,
thanks.
So stop it, Rooney illusion. I'm not supportive.
are you in character now as podcast Matthew?
Yeah,
you're such a prick.
Yeah.
Right, lads. If you've not guessed already, it's the usual Manchester crew because we've not done a roundtable in ages. This roundtable is going to be slightly different. Because we never got to do a WrestleMania roundtable, despite the fact that Christopher was sat near me at WrestleMania. We've not got a chance because I've been away for ages. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff from the last month, but instead of trying to talk about everything in this podcast being 9 hours long, I've come up with 10 little subjects that we're going to talk about in this roundtable. So it might be the new format of roundtable we do going forward. I don't know, because time is of a premium for everybody these days, including you, dear listener. So we're going to do that. If you haven't guessed, it's the usual two who normally do these with us. Now, we sat in Chris's front room, and he's lit a candle, which is very seductive. So, guest number one, Christopher Francesca Brooker.
And it's soft cotton.
It is soft cotton.
It's got a nice... It's got the
Yankee scent. Candle as well. You've not had a knock-off Tesco one.
No.
It's a fucking big jar. It's a 17 quid.
It's pleasant without being evasive. It's like that.
Evasive?
Evasive.
It's pleasant without being... Yeah. The smell's fucked off out
sorry,
the door.
Sorry, I forgot. I forgot.
Chase the candle.
I forgot I was talking about candles to start talking about my ex-girlfriend.
Is that a new drug reference? What are you doing tonight? I'm off to chase the candle.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Hi.
Hi.
It's that's going on the Amazon review, you know.
It's pleasant, a full...
not evasive.
It's a full 17 quid... jar.
Yeah.
get it from Asda. It's a bit less.
See, I know this because my wife has filled my house full of candles. Well, that's because that's what happens when you get married.
Wives do.
Candles and cushions.
Candles and children.
Hey, we're going down there. We're going down the stereotypical, this is the difference between men and women, stand-up route now. Fucking, she just buys cushions.
It's true, though. I mean,
it is true. I've got a load of cushions.
It's not a revelation, but it's true.
Oh, dear.
The only reason there's so
tea lights! I've got fucking millions of them!
Neither of us care. I mean, you know, you went off and found yourself a pin-up to marry, so, frankly, it's on you. Go fuck yourself.
Oh, God.
And you bred and made a beautiful child.
He's all right. He says car too much. At roughly 17,000.
Well, like a raven.
Know van. Like, so you'll be walking down the road, and the van will go past, he'll go, car. And I'll be like, that's very clever, son, but it's clearly a van. Car, what? That's a pickup truck.
You should enjoy this intellectual superiority while it lasts. He's getting smarter, you're getting stupider. We all are. Brain cells are dying.
Be dead soon, I'm nearly 40.
Right. At least you've got a book.
I have. I've got
a
book.
Did you mention it?
£18.99 in hardback.
What the fuck? Seriously?
In hardback.
Is that how much you got? Yeah. When's paperback out?
Paperback's 6 months after hardback.
How much is that?
I don't know. Probably a tenner.
I know that because I want to buy a football book because I'm going through that.
I think I've still got a
that's how tight you are. I'm waiting.
I want to read it, but not that much.
Do you know what? I might just go back and read that Word file I got sent properly. Yeah, that might be a bit
better. It's changed now.
I'll get the idea.
Anyway, Chris, I've plugged my book, Chris. What would you like to plug, he said, knowing what he wants to plug and the fact that he asked me to do plugs at the start so people listen to them?
Well, they stopped listening. I think they fast-forwarded.
They've stopped now, if we're honest.
Yeah.
I can look at the metrics. It drops off the first 5 minutes. They go, who's on? Oh, Matt's on. Stop listening.
Pretty much.
I thought that'd pick up because everyone feels better about themselves when they listen to Matthew Taylor Richards. That's my phone going off. I'm sorry.
Oh, for the love of God!
That's my brother. He can wait. Yeah. Sorry, Kev.
Some professionalism. My phone's going to read in 5 minutes there, isn't it?
Yeah,
of course.
My phone's got. I've got the noise on my phone, so it's noisy. Because I used to be a radio presenter. I'm so used to my phone being on silent, and from being a comedian, just having my phone on silent all the time. I've had the noises on my phone for the last week, and it's quite liberating actually knowing when people want to speak to me.
Anyway, we've got a plug, Chris.
Plugs right. For Chris.
So, on May 13th, Future Shot Wrestling is bringing Sexy back. And by sexy, I mean wrestling. Yeah. And by back, I mean back to
Stockport.
Would you say
Stockport. Those other motherfuckers don't... I don't know what the lyric is.
I don't know.
Don't know how to act.
Thanks.
Yeah. this is not really in keeping with line in our company's values, is it?
No.
All this talk.
No.
Remind me in a minute to tell my Usher joke. Carry on.
Oh, good.
It's all about him, innit?
Absolutely. Hey.
Says Jim Smallman's choosing our jaw, motherfuckers. I'm sat here with sunglasses on now because I'm an author.
Oh, the future's bright.
Anyway, carry
on. May 13th, yes. Future Shock Wrestling. We are taking pro wrestling to Stockport Town Hall for the first time in a generation.
Yeah.
For 20 years. In fact, morbid trivia buff fans, the last show there was the one that Yokozuna should have been on but wasn't.
When he died because he had a heart attack because he saw a spider in a travel lodge.
That's right.
But I'm not making that up. That is legit how Yokozuna died, wasn't it?
Yeah, travel lodge in Liverpool.
Travel lodge in Liverpool, saw a spider, had a heart attack, died. What a way to go.
Bless him.
Banzai! what we have for your delectation is a family-friendly night of action and excitement. We are family-friendly without being shit. We are the end...
You swore in a plug about being family friendly.
It's knowing your audience.
Please know my audience. Flyers. Hand those on flyers.
Family friendly, but we're not shit.
We're not shit. I promise you, it's alright. There's something for everyone.
No, but people do.
There's a bit of Bluefoot dance.
Especially what's interesting, we've had people say when they've come and seen one of our events, they've gone, you know what? I didn't realise. There was no point where I thought this needs more swearing or anything. It's just, you know, people are realising that you don't necessarily just have to go to an 18-plus show to see good wrestling and have a good time. And we have what I think will quietly be one of the best wrestling cards you'll see anywhere in the country. We have our championship match, which is Cyanide, £500 of him. Yeah. I might as well say 500. Fuck it, we'll round up. Taking on Ashton Smith. Sometimes we're running through everyone. We've got Wolfgang, our adrenaline champion, defending against hometown Joey Hayes, yeah. local lad. We have a grudge match that's been six, seven, 8 months in the making. Sam Bailey, Sonny Dursun finally gets his hands on him. That's going to be tremendous. We have what I think could be a sleeper hit, which is Tag Team Championship, which is the Sexy Gents, John McGregor and Kevin Lloyd, against Tyson T-Bone and Chris Ridgeway. And if that isn't a team that intrigues people, I don't know what we need to put together. Viper and Lee Owens and Lana Austin versus the Queen Bees, Molly Spartan, Casey Owens and Jayla Dark. And probably more that I've forgotten.
Yeah.
But it's going to be out this world, so come and be part of it. It's May 13th, futureshockwrestling.com.
When I'm not mocking my two friends, I went to a Future Shock show. I forget when the show was, what I went to. It was in the winter because it was very cold. And I had a great time, like genuinely. I can sometimes get quite wrestled out because this is my job now. And especially when you're aware that I have spent ages writing about wrestling for the last 6 months. I am some days absolutely sick of it. And I went to that show when I was in the middle of writing the book and I was a bit tired, and I went to that show and I had an absolutely great time. Genuinely great time. And the fact that you're doing Stockport Town Hall is great for how Future Shock's doing, and I heartily recommend it. I tell anyone who I know who lives up here in the Northwest who's got kids to go along and support it. And it's brilliant. So, genuinely, don't just take Chris's word for it, because Chris is a guest on this podcast on a very common basis. I think Future Shock are great. Go and support it. Support shows like that. Shows like that on May the 13th, being in a place like Stockport Town Hall, is brilliant. So, you know, if you want to get behind British wrestling, go to that show. All right? Good. Matthew. Matthew Taylor Richards. There are other guests. Hipster who supports Leon can't eat bread. That's pretty much the headlines. Looks like Morrissey more than ever today. Picked him up from Salford Lads Club earlier on. I didn't.
Why do you sound like Alan Partridge?
I don't know.
Picked him up from Salford Lads Club before.
He's got a book out. He's going mainstream.
I know, isn't he?
Proper mainstream.
I've been dying to get mainstream for ages. it's where the money is, isn't it?
Join us after the break as we find out how to milk a nut.
Mate, Carl Donnelly, who's a brilliant stand-up comedian, who's a vegan, once said to me, like, we're backstage and he was talking about being a vegan. I went, it must be difficult. It was before I was even a vegetarian. I said, it must be difficult being a vegan. He went, nah, not really. I make my own nut milk now. And I went, don't we all, Carl? And walked off. I was so happy. So happy. And now I drink the stuff.
Now you're eating all them poor soy babies, you murderer. You soy murderer.
I deliberately want genetically advanced soy as well. I want my soy to have 8 arms.
What? AstroTurf, so you can...
Do you need to plug anything, Matt, before we get into doing a
podcast? I don't need to plug anything. I mean...
Good.
I mean, I can.
Do you want to defend Morrissey at any point today?
Absolutely not. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah, well,
he's a piece of shit that just happened to be in a really good band. That's it.
And has one really good solo record.
Ooh, see, I don't even like his solo stuff.
I like one of his... Last of the Famous International Playboys is a very good solo Morrissey song. Tweet us your favourite solo Morrissey song before he became a massive prick. At Jim Smallman. Hashtag Tuesday Night Joy. That's not the hashtag game.
I don't need to plug anything, but I have got something coming up in a couple of weeks, which I'm genuinely looking forward to for like... on like a couple of levels. So on the like 17th, 18th and 19th, I'm doing an evening with Ted DiBiase for Kayfabe Events.
Oh, yeah.
But this is the lineup for the show. So it's me doing the sort of evening with bit, yeah, with Ted DiBiase, hosting the Q&A, Jimmy Havoc. Also in attendance, Jack Sexsmith.
It's like they've not thought it through.
3 days in Newcastle, Glasgow and Manchester. It's going to be, I'm genuinely thinking about making like a mini documentary, like fly on the wall. Amazing.
That's the best road trip ever.
Isn't it? I'm so pumped. Cannot wait.
Ted DiBiase now looks, yeah, like my dad looked 20 years ago, despite the fact that Ted DiBiase is older than my dad. It's weird. Like,
I'll let him know. Hey, mate. Sorry, mate.
He's a nice Jim's man. Dad. Met him briefly at Access. Very nice, good man.
Looking forward to it. That's going to be wild.
Good. Christopher came up with the hashtag game for this. So go on, Chris. Tell us.
It's going to be... I thought I'd just go with takeaways, only because I had Just Eat open at that point.
Yeah. So
I'll start off. NXT, Takeaway Brooklyn. You're welcome.
It's not bad.
Trent, number 7 with rice and chips.
Shawarma machine.
Oh! Kadoosh!
Thank you. Kadoosh. No. Damn you, NXT branding, for making that slightly less relevant than it was a month ago.
Shisuke Nakamura.
Oh, that hurt. Good lord, that hurt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. That's the thing.
I'll come back to them. Any takeaway / wrestler related puns? Hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw at Jim Smallman on Twitter. Right, let's go through our 10 subjects. Don't want to keep you. We're going to try and keep this under 2 hours. Let's see.
So Calzone Val.
That's good, isn't it?
I think essentially we're just going through what I would order so far.
Temptation to open Just Eat is quite high.
It's an everyday temptation.
MSG.
Bravo, sir.
It's simple, but it's effective.
I'm not laughing at the joke. I'm laughing that that's what my brain went. Yeah, that'd be good to say that on a massive podcast. Why not? You said worse.
We've gone mainstream. We can coast now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, point number 10. So I've come up with 10 big headlines.
Yeah.
We'll probably go off on tangents. 10 big headlines over the course.
Have we become Watch Mojo?
Yes, we have. That's what we are now.
Man.
And we're going to talk about.
Properly mainstream.
I'm going to do a side podcast where we talk about the philosophy of takeaways.
Yes.
That's what everyone else is doing.
10 big headlines, or big takeaways, if you like. of the last month, because it's far too difficult for us to talk about everything that's happened in the last month, because mm-hmm. there's been two big pay per views. Well, you can't take over 3 big pay per views. Plus loads of other mad shit. So,
and you don't even know where you are.
No, my body still does not know where it is. So, and won't, because it's apparently every hour time difference takes a day to get over. So the maximum
24
time difference.
24 days.
The maximum time difference I had was 16 hours. So, yeah.
It's got an hard life.
I'm going to die.
Could at least have brought a penguin back for us.
Point number 10 that we're going to discuss first. A child wins a tag team title. Now, I was in the arena when this happened. And people are going to go, yeah, but you're too positive about WWE. No, I know I'm positive about WWE. I quite like wrestling. I don't see the point of being negative. I genuinely popped for it happening because I understood why they did it. The only thing I didn't like about Nicholas winning the title was the fact that it took Braun ages to find him. And it involved him walking past a lot of wrestlers, including Johnny Moss.
For a very long period of time.
It felt like he was walking for a long time.
Yeah.
But it was a moment, again, people forget. So TakeOver's for us. I say that to us three in the room and to you, dear listener. TakeOver's the show for us. WrestleMania is also a show for us, but it's for people who only watch wrestling once a year. Mm-hmm. So it has to have that occasionally.
It's the Eurovision Song Contest of professional wrestling.
No, because it's good.
Well, you know, but you know, if you're comparing it to the fact that people don't generally spend the rest of the year watching Europop, watching someone from Bulgaria, you know, discover which end of the keyboard to blow into.
Imagine Terry Wogan on commentary. That'd be glorious.
Someone get some Eurovision Song Contest Terry Wogan commentary and overdub it over some wrestling for us, please.
Look at these fuckers on a bridge. Just fishing away.
So I was in the... And there's going to be a guy I'm going to mention when we talk about WrestleMania a lot. And it's not someone who competed in ring. It's a man who was sat 3 rows behind me and about 5 seats to the left, who is the biggest dick I have ever met at professional wrestling ever. At one point, we turned around and told him to shut up during the main event, but we'll get around to that in a bit. Basically, he was the smarkiest of smarky fans in that I don't think he necessarily always understood why he was booing things. But that's what he felt he had to do, so he was choosing to boo it. Most people around me, when that happened, thought it was a bit of fun, which is what it was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be too, super overly serious or anything like that. It was meant to be a bit of fun. The way they abandoned the title on Raw the next night was genuinely hilarious.
It was beautiful.
It was really funny. And it's made Braun a more rounded character rather than a man who commits attempted murder with ambulances.
Well, people say that, pro wrestling isn't realistic enough, but what's more realistic than saying no? Stay in school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Precisely. It's
so you're saying Braun Strowman is the kind of like 80s cliche, like, hey kids.
Braun Strowman is the green cross code man.
Wow.
Only me and Chris are old enough to
know. No. I got it.
No. Matt's seen cave paintings in Wales.
To be fair.
The green cross code. Was it Oliver Rocco, the green cross code man, for a bit?
It was something. He's done like an infomercial.
Sure, Oliver Rocco did something like that. It might have been Bob Carroll, Jesus, the same man. I nearly made Chris Fitties drink out. I'm so proud.
No, I think we had Super Ted by the time I was in school. But I do remember it.
Right, go and do this now. Super Ted had the most over-the-top, full-on disco number theme tune.
Yeah.
Like, it overly produced.
The whole show was mental.
It's absolutely banging the theme tune to Super Ted.
And also, like, the fact that he takes his own skin off to reveal his costume always. Like, even as a child, I was like, all right. And
he ever once, like, took one too many layers off and just there with his skeleton shrieking.
Oh, no, it's happened again.
In the flat above having sex violently.
I don't know.
No, I believe whoever it is has lost both their feet and simply runs around on their ankle stumps.
Yeah, clearly. So I watched WrestleMania. that is very visual.
Oh, God.
So I watched WrestleMania because I did the Attack Pro show in Cardiff, so I got to watch WrestleMania with all the
guys. There's no promotion in this country, Matthew, you don't work for now.
You're telling me.
It's one of the perks of going mainstream.
So, yeah. Cheers, mate. Is that mentioned in the book? I'm going to be doing everywhere. But yeah, so I was watching it with like all the guys and girls from Attack. Mainly Chris Ridgway. And the fun that we both had was immense. But allegedly, now, I'm pretty sure this happened, Chuck Mambo was there being delightful and just a ray of sunshine. And we sat next to us for a while and we were laughing. But apparently Chuck fell asleep at some point and woke up to see Braun Strowman and a child leaving with tag team titles. And it took him a long time to like process and comprehend while everyone was kind of like, he's like, what happened? And we're kind of like, well, it's exactly what it looks like. A child just won the tag team titles with Braun Strowman. So
what it's done as well is we've talked about this on the podcast before about an action in a match resetting people's expectations.
Okay.
So one of the biggest problems as a wrestling promoter is if ever you have a mystery person in a match, is that people instantly expect the absolute world. Now, I expected from this match, and I'll put it out there right now, I kept nudging John and Glenn going, Rey Mysterio's music's going to play in a minute. Rey Mysterio's coming out in a minute and I'm going to lose my mind because I love Rey Mysterio. This is going to be brilliant. It's going to reset that time he got booed in the Royal Rumble by how big this pop's going to be. It's going to be like when the Hardys came back last year. It's going to be mental. And then it didn't happen and he chose a child. And
how do you know it wasn't Rey without the mask?
He wasn't tall enough. So I have every wrestler's height memorised. That's the research for the book. It's just a list of names ordered in high order. Raja Lion's top. He's not. So it's reset people's expectations because whenever it's a mystery partner or a mystery opponent or whatever, people expect the absolute world. And what it's done, it's like when Goldberg beat Brock Lesnar in 90 seconds, it made everyone go, oh, it's a fight. Someone can just be beaten dead simply. Whereas now it's made people go, it's like the old Carney days of like picking a ringer from a crowd. But the absolute opposite end of the spectrum. We've picked a referee's son.
Yes.
This then leads on to a bit of a moment later on. So I was sort of in the hotel where WWE were staying, basically creeping, trying to find autographs, the usual thing that I do when people are more successful than me. So I'm on this podcast. But
yeah, Matt is pretty successful. He does all those promotions. Mainstream.
Yeah, mainstream.
I might just call this podcast Going Mainstream this episode. Yeah. Going Mainstream Roundtable.
And it's interesting, if you've ever been around, I love people watching. Mm. Being in the hotel where WWE are staying is a fascinating thing to do. Not so much to look for wrestlers, but to look at people looking at wrestlers.
Yeah.
To watch people around them. And after the Hall of Fame, because Billy Kirkwood and I were there, we both made a bit of effort. We both sort of dressed up quite smartly. You could see people kind of giving us a quick once over, trying to figure out A, who we were, and B, if we were important. And the answer was no one and no.
Yeah.
But there was a sudden commotion, and I wasn't kind of expecting it. And clearly, someone had arrived.
Mm.
And I wandered around the corner. It was Nicholas. Yeah. People were going batshit for him, and
good for him.
Yeah. And he was swarmed with cocaine and hookers and debauchery.
The best bit is Nicholas is going right on the indies now is high.
Oh, yeah.
I bet, yeah.
So the amount of people who've suggested that the progress book Nicholas is quite a few. Thanks. If you've tweeted me that, maybe stop now.
Some child labour laws come into it, though.
So, I find the whole thing was... It was fun. Wrestling's meant to be fun.
So the thing for me was my friend's wife, who likes the occasional bit of wrestling, was like, when I saw her, because she ended up working an event with her husband that was like a wrestling event, and she was so positive and bubbly and excited by it. She was like, oh, wasn't this really good fun and whatever. And I was like, well, there you go. That's it.
The thing. You're meant... WrestleMania is a pop culture phenomenon. I know that's the phrase they use on the telly, but it is. You are meant to reel in other people. That's why they have celebrities on.
Showcase the Immortals.
Yeah. You're meant to make other people who aren't wrestling fans. We are wrestling fans. I watch every pay-per-view, right?
Don't know.
Right? I watch every pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And there's going to be people who listen to this who watch every pay-per-view.
Yeah.
They don't need to do anything special at WrestleMania to make us watch it. We'll watch it. It's WrestleMania. It's the other people. To sell 70, 80,000 tickets every time you go into a city is a big deal. Mm. Not every WWE pay-per-view can sell that many tickets. This is the one that is a big deal and has a big selling point. And that is that it's everything. It's every form of entertainment. And that means sometimes you have to do stuff that in the eyes of super serious... furrowed brow wrestling fans, they look at that and go, stupid. Yeah, but wrestling's stupid.
And you can read all about this in Jim's second book, How to Sell Out with James Smallman. Because that's what you would do. You would change your name to sound more professional.
I can't. There's already a James Smallman in Equity. So
to be also, by the way, Costa Kofi Kingston. It's not technically a takeaway, but...
I got one stuck in my head that I'm trying to make work, which is it's pizza related. I'm just going to foreshadow. Let me finish mine first. I'm halfway through.
No names, Jim.
I'm going to foreshadow mine, which is it's pizza related, and that's Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, Tully Blanchard, the Four Seasons. I need to get Four Seasons in because it's a type of pizza and I can't.
Well, I'm going to counter that with Deuce and Domino's.
Yeah, I heard that, but I was just like, nah.
Low hanging fruit is still fruit.
Yeah.
Papa John Cena's.
You know, when you said that, I felt like you were singing that Madonna song.
Papa John Cena's.
Please, again, if you're capable.
And it's not there in 30 minutes, it's free.
That was number 10. Number 9. Independent wrestling in New Orleans. There was a lot of it.
Little Chef Peter Maivia.
Oh, man!
Oh, I hate myself so much.
Has anyone else got hurt by Johnny Cash playing in their head right now?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so Dwayne, I'm sorry.
I have to apologise to the Maivia dynasty.
Oh. Hang on. Fuck Little Chef. They've gone out of business.
They haven't.
Haven't they?
No. Not with Peter Maivia's name.
Little Chef story. I went into a little chef once. I used to love a little chef breakfast, right? And I went into a little chef on the way to a gig in, when I lived in Leicester, I went to a little chef on the way to a gig in Peterborough, right? And I pull in and I go in, and the two lads working in the little chef are the two most stoned lads I've ever met, ever. And I walk in and I go, I just have a table for one. And the guy goes, yeah, I'm just making some breakfast. Sit where you want, mate. So I sit down, right? I'm not kidding, he's smoking in the kitchen, right? And he turns around, I'm just sitting there just looking at the menu. He turns around and goes, hey, mate, do you want some toast? I went, well, yeah, I was going to get a breakfast. And he went, nah, I'm making some toast now if you want some. So he makes some toast, brings me some toast over, like honestly, like 8 pieces of toast. Then goes, just brings that over, goes back to the kitchen. And there's two lads, there's like in most little chefs, there's a guy cooking and there's a guy serving and cleaning the tables who does some cooking as well. That's it. And the guy goes to me, goes, what do you want? I go, Olympic breakfast. And he goes, all right, no worries. He goes, walks up to the freezer. He goes, how many sausages do you want? I go, two? And he goes, all right. Pulls the sausages out. They're frozen. Snaps two sausages off. And then, from like the distance from me here to the door, so like 5-6 feet away, just throws the sausages into the deep fat fryer from distance.
Oh, my God.
I was like, yes, you're a god.
And I wonder why they went out of business. Harvey Wimpy Man.
Wow.
I liked Wimpy when I was a kid.
Good. Wow.
Harvey Wimpy Man.
Good.
Which sounds like something that someone that only has like a passing interest in wrestling would say. I remember when talking to Ted DiBiase before. I remember one of our friends, it was CJ Banks' friend, once called, what's he call him? Oh, he's like, oh, you're into that wrestling, aren't you? Is there Ted DeBase still wrestling? You know, Ted DeBase.
Ted DeBase.
Which is a great, like, raver gimmick name.
Frankie Kazarian and Benny's. I don't know if that was a takeaway.
I mean, you can get it with your Deuce and Domino's.
Yeah,
so.
Nice.
Good. Right, number 9, indie wrestling in New Orleans. There was loads of it. A few people said to me, what was your favourite match you saw in New Orleans? I didn't go to loads of indie wrestling shows because it turns out I was dead busy. The one indie wrestling show I did go to outside of my own companies was GCW's Bloodsport show that was great because it had Matt Riddle against Minoru Suzuki, who was a last-minute substitute for Loki, who pulled out of the show for either completely legitimate or completely dodgy reasons, depending on what person you believe. I mean, it was that whole scenario was, the gossip around it itself was brilliant. That show was great. Partly because I went backstage to it, because it was in our venue. I went backstage to say hello to a few people. And when I went backstage for that, I saw Eddie Kingston, who regular followers of me on Twitter will know I love as a wrestler.
Yeah.
And I saw Eddie Kingston, who I've met once. And then every single time I've seen him since, he greets me like a long-lost friend. Mm-hmm. Knows my name, knows everything about me, just a good dude.
Yep.
And I'd already seen him in our hotel before I went backstage at GCW, go backstage, and he just shouts at me from across the room, goes, hey, motherfucker, you're a rival promoter. What are you doing in here? I'll fucking kill you. And then comes over and just puts his arm around me and goes, ah! I'm like, good.
Hi, Eddie.
He is the most aggressive, lovely man in the world ever. He's a genuine joy, but he conveys his joy in a very angry
is he,
Brooklyn manner.
Is he the living embodiment of the Belfast accent?
No, because that's actually aggressive. Everything Eddie says sounds like it's actually quite friendly, whilst you know he could kill you if he wanted to.
So,
the reason I was backstage was to go and see the Louisiana State Athletic Commissioner. if you're not familiar with this, to give you a backstory, we were all told that all moves in New Orleans were banned by one person from the Louisiana State Athletic Commission. Now, that wasn't true. One guy from the Louisiana State Athletic Commission had got a bit gobby and said that everything was banned.
Okay.
And then people at WrestleCon and people at the WM venue that we were using just spoke to the commission and they went, no, pile drivers are banned.
Right.
And blood's banned, which is fine. Blood's banned in New York. So, yeah. Like, we've been through that before. We don't have a lot of blood on our shows. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So I go and see the Louisiana State Athletic Commissioner, who is called Elmo. Now, at every point, people were saying, like, people coming up to me going, have you seen the commissioner yet? I'm going, yeah, his name's Elmo. They're going, oh, a bit intimidated about seeing him. I mean, what if he asked me questions? I went, just tickle him, right? And no one got the joke, and I was so proud. I go and see him, and he's a big dude with a beard. And he's wearing his state athletic commissioner's badge around his neck like he's a sheriff. Like, it's brilliant. And I sit down in front of him, and he's got a proper Louisiana accent I will not do justice to. And I say, hello, sir, my name's Jim. I'm here to get my license. And he goes, okay, have we got your paperwork? And I went, I think so. I sent it across like 3 weeks ago. And he goes through a little folder, and you can't find it. And he goes, oh, we're missing a few people's paperwork. Exact words from an important state assigned commissioner. He goes, fuck it, fill it in now. Right, so I fill in my thing. And he goes, so you're a wrestler or a referee? And I went, I'm neither, and I'm an announcer. Again, his exact words, he goes, fuck are you doing? You don't need a license to be an announcer. At which point, I point out the thing that says announcer on his own. I go, it says it there. And he takes off his reading glasses to see it better somehow and just goes, well, I'll be. $20. And then I became a licensed announcer. My license lasts until the end of the year. He was a joy. He was genuinely and really... And people were frightened of it. And I think the WrestleCon venue, the guy they got there wasn't necessarily as nice as our guy. But he was lovely. He was a really, really nice dude. Although a fun thing that happened on our first show was Pete Dunne won a match using the better end, which is, of course, his pump handle move into a tombstone. And the minute he hit it, because everyone was... No one had seen a power driver at this point. On any of the shows because they're banned. He hits a pile driver and the whole place goes, yay, it's a great move. And then the reaction is, yay, great move. Oh, fuck, he's done a pile driver. And then about 1,500 people turn around to me as if to go, well, you're fucked now. And I thought I was because I didn't realise that Pete had asked permission from Elmo to do it. Presumably, because if you work for WWE, you're allowed to do a pile driver. That's what was said. He carries a WWE title belt everywhere with him. Presumably, he went in, saw Elmo to get his license, just slapped that down on the table and went, I'm doing a pile driver, all the best, and just fucked off again.
Just the phrase, it's all right, because he asked Elmo if he could do a pile driver.
Yeah. Welcome to how weird New Orleans was. I enjoyed our shows in New Orleans. The weird thing was, we were in a very big venue with a very high ceiling, so... The atmosphere was fine for indie shows in America. The atmosphere is not as good as I would like the atmosphere to be at our shows here. And what was weird was we had a lot of friends who are wrestlers in America come as our guests on the show on the Saturday. No, the Friday, rather. We had a lot of our friends come, a lot of whom work for WWE or NXT now. And a couple of them were saying, oh, it's such a shame. I'll probably never get a chance to wrestle for you guys because the atmosphere is amazing. And I was having to say to them, oh, this atmosphere, this is fine, but our atmosphere at the ballroom is like off the charts. This is okay, like because that it was bothering me because of the difference in the venue and how far away it is, and the fact it was the earliest show of the day. It felt a bit. The atmosphere wasn't as I would like it to be, and I've said this to everybody.
But then you're going to go in with great expectations because you are presenting your baby. You are presenting the most precious thing.
The last show we did in America was in New York, which is the best atmosphere at any show I've ever been to ever, including every show we've ever had in the UK.
So I mean, usually if a crowd's not coming with the show, it's usually the MC's fault. So maybe you should take a long, hard look at yourself. Maybe it was you.
Oi, hey. Licensed. Are you licensed?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
Come on, when you got a license.
Because you can't license me. I'm the unlicensed ring announcer. Yeah.
Well, you won't be getting any fucking work in New Orleans, will you? Apparently, some people, going back to the license thing, some people have actually been banned from wrestling in New Orleans. And it was only when I spoke to friends with WWE who said to me, oh yeah, like anywhere where there is a state athletic commission, which includes New York, they talk to each other. So there's people who've gone, fuck it, I'll do it. I'm never going to wrestle in New Orleans again. I'm going to do a pile driver. And they now might be banned. And they might try and wrestle in New York and still be banned. So it's a bit of a grey area. But the whole weekend was mad for independent wrestling. Like, my one concern is, it's a bit like the Edinburgh Fringe. There's probably slightly too many shows now. So it did feel a little bit like when you think that when TakeOver was going on, there was 13,000 people at TakeOver plus 5,000-ish people at Ring of Honor. And there were still indie companies trying to run shows at that time, and that's going to be difficult.
No, you know what? If when you have like 50,000 people who come to town, but maybe let's say maybe 40,000 to 50,000 people who come to town for this event, why not just throw it all out there? And people will sink or swim. You know,
I mean, we had a great time. We had roughly 2,500 fans come to our two shows, which is great. The Saturday show was slightly quieter because there was more stuff going on, but for me, and if you've watched 66 and 67 back on demand-progress.com yet, like the Saturday show was a better show for me. Like it was more lighthearted and more fun, and it felt more like us rather than us trying to do loads and loads of matches that were important. We had some fun, partly out of necessity, because like Will Ospreay was so banged up, we changed his match to a mixed tag match, and they did some really cool stuff in that. And that show was fun. I enjoyed that show. I enjoyed the Friday show. I just enjoyed the Saturday show slightly more. Yeah.
The Friday show was the only one I went to that wasn't WWE, mainly because I wanted to see some of New Orleans as well.
I saw none of New Orleans, but equally, Bourbon Street is the thing of most terror for me. Glenn had tweeted within about 2 minutes of being on Bourbon Street, he was drunk and had been offered Class A drugs, which obviously he said no to. But when he mentioned that to me, I'm like, oh, I'm a recovered addict. Nope, I'm never going to Bourbon Street, and never went there once. I went nowhere. Our venue was...
hey, tell you where you did go. Sesame Street, though, didn't you? Elmo, Sesame Street.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit... Yeah.
I just needed to say something because I don't care. I don't watch anything. WrestleMania weekend.
It's actually Mexican. It's El Mo.
Yeah, it's Sir Mo's mask luchador gimmick.
El Mo.
What was I saying? Our venue was a long way away from everything. And again, we love our friends at WWM very much. We don't know much about America, so we're trusted in their hands. So if they say to us, we're doing the show in this venue, we'll go, yeah, cool, because they're our friends and we love doing shows with Sal and Gabe at WWM. But it was, fair to say, a long way away. Now, after Joey Janela's Spring Break show, which by all means was nuts, after that show, because there were so many people, a lot of people use Lyft, which is like kind of a version of Uber, but it has... like scales of prices depending on demand. And if you wanted an SUV lift back from the Pontchartrain Exhibition Centre where the shows were, which is maybe 12 miles out of the city centre, it was costing people $500.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that is nuts. Mm. So you kind of need to be able to drive to get there. I was talking to Pete Dunne about it, and I was talking about people getting Ubers, and he went, yeah, I had to get a submarine. So what he went, yeah, because that venue, like, there's the whole of the earth and then there's the ocean. Yeah, it was a long way away, and you know, it's something to consider for, you know, if we do a show at WrestleMania next year, is maybe making sure that the venue is slightly easier for everybody. I wish I went to more shows. If you went to WrestleMania weekend and you went to indie shows, what was the best thing you saw? At Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. Because Matthew can't answer this, he wasn't there. Christopher can't answer this, he only went to our show. And I'm biased because I was at our shows. I did really enjoy Kaiju Big Battle.
Yeah, it looked amazing.
Partly because a lot of our lads were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, doing it. There was a moment in this, so I'm really... You know when you're tired and you're a bit delirious?
Mm-hmm.
So watching Kaiju Big Battle, which if you're not familiar, is people in giant rubber costumes wrestling each other. And there's constant commentary at ringside that everyone can hear. And there's a point where there's a character, I don't know who was playing said character, called the Burger Bear. And the Burger Bear is a bear whose head is a burger. And he's wrestling in a battle royal. And someone who is wrestling, I think it was a giant waffle, has a giant cardboard razor blade that they slap him on the top of the head with. And then blood starts spurting out the top of his head. And when this happened, I was watching it with Glenn. When this happened, I fell on the floor laughing. Like, I was so tired and so delirious, I fell down. I'd been to TakeOver. I watched that after TakeOver. It was mental. Right.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Subject number 8, that takeover ladder match. Mm-hmm. Did it last 5 minutes? Did it last an hour? No one knows. One of two matches on that show, and we'll get to the other one in a bit, rated 5 stars by Dave Meltzer. Wow. A 5-match show where the lowest rated match got 3.5 stars and 2 got 5.
Wow.
It is, was it Canadian Stampede that was always the really well, highly ranked WWE In Your House.
Yeah, that was one of
back in the day. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people talk about, because that's got Sasuke against Taka Michinoku. And that's got very, very, for only 5 matches, every match on it is very highly rated. I think this takeover is now one of the highest rated by average rating per match shows in the history of wrestling. I tweeted about it. It's my favourite show I've ever attended.
Okay.
The end. Like, I would be surprised if nothing's going to beat it this year. And again, I'm not including my own company's shows in that. That would be stupid. I'm biased. But nothing is going to beat it for me this year, whether I watch it live or watch it recorded. Mm. It was better for me top to bottom than Wrestle Kingdom was.
Okay. Yeah.
I know Wrestle Kingdom was brilliant, because it was. It was genuinely brilliant. But this was better for me than Wrestle Kingdom, because Wrestle Kingdom was good, but still had points that were just fine rather than great. Everything on this on TakeOver was great, and it started with this ladder match. Is this ladder match, it's a question for you lads, answer however you choose. Is this ladder match the greatest ladder match in the history of time? Go!
No.
What is?
I don't think any one ladder match is, because without wanting to sound a bit too wet, everything is sort of judged by where you find it. Because like Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, it was brilliant. But it would never be the same as it was when I was watching that ladder match back in 1994.
See, I think that ladder match is the greatest ladder match of all time. Mm-hmm. The original Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon one. Because it was the one that set the benchmark at the time. And I know everything's topped it since.
Oh yeah. Well,
and it's not like matches haven't... This match is definitely more crazy than that ladder match.
Of course it is.
But at the time, that ladder match stuck out so much. This ladder match sticks out in WWE terms, but if you've watched a PWG show, it doesn't stick out loads. But, so
yeah, it's no one did ladder matches before that.
Yeah,
not really. And
well,
now
Bret Hart invented them, didn't he?
Apparently. Well, of course.
So he says.
But then but that was the one that made them kind of mainstream, and you see it a lot. So I think it was excellent. I think everyone shone. Mm-hmm. Everyone at their moment. Everyone looked like at some point they could have been the one to win it. Mm. And it was amazing. There was never a point where it let up. And it's certainly the best one in recent memory, I'd say.
It was brilliant. I mean, there was so many stories told with it. A lot of people look at it and go, ladder match, spot fest. Yeah, but every bit of the spottiness of it helped tell the story. Everyone had their own... Well, I mean, one of my favourite bits about it is Ricochet's first move in his WWE career is a double springboard shooting star press to the outside. So you know when people go, oh, I bet they're going to slow Ricochet down? No, clearly not. Clearly not. And
you kind of know what you're getting when you buy, when you sign Ricochet.
He looked great in the match. Velveteen Dream looked great in the match. Adam Cole obviously looked great in the match and won the match. Killian Dane looked great in the match. Lars Sullivan looked great in the match. Who's the one person I've forgotten? EC3 looked great in the match. It was his debut as well. So everyone looked brilliant, and everyone in it is a slightly different style of wrestler. And I think that's the bit that makes it really interesting. It's not loads of people who are the same size and the same style of wrestler. It's lots of different people.
That, to me, is like a snapshot of the perfect wrestling show. Because a lot of it, I think what made it stand out is that a lot of the stuff is homogenised, where you get everyone, you can go to an indie show, and everyone has almost exactly the same moves.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they're 5'9" and 180 pounds or 6'4" and 300 pounds. Everyone seems to want to do everything.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone kind of did what they did very well, and it was different ingredients all coming together.
What's your favourite ladder match?
Hardy Boys, Dudley's, Edge and Christian. Because that was my generation's Michaels and Hall.
Yeah.
Because it,
which one?
The first, the Mania one. Yeah. I think TLC's better the year after in terms of like a match, but in terms of a ladder match, because it felt, I don't know, it probably felt the same way as Michaels and Hall did, that it just felt so different from the rest of the universe that WWE had at the time. But yeah, that's the one that sticks out for me. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match, and I think the reason I really enjoyed this match was it felt like everyone had a really strong identity in it, and everyone's identity shone through. It almost felt like it had chapters or phases, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
It felt like there was a bit where it was like, oh, here's Ricochet, look at all the mental stuff that Ricochet does, oh, wicked. And then they had the bit with Lars and Killian, and that felt really different. And then, you know, portraying Velveteen in the way that they did, as well as EC3, and obviously Adam Cole ultimately being a little shit that gets the job done. Like, it felt like that comment about, was it 5 minutes or, you know, a day, is so true, because it felt like it just went from different phases. And I think the one thing it did really well for me was, you mentioned about resetting expectations with the Nicholas bit. I think there's always an expectation in a ladder match that the finish needs to be like pure death. Like, it has to be the biggest, most spectacular thing in the world. Again, obviously,
someone has to take a flat back bump 17 feet down to the earth.
And you know, me mentioning the Hardy Boys, Dudleys and Edge and Christian set that expectation. Mm. So 18 years later, having a match that still absolutely had moments that people will still be talking around, but a finish that was still sensible and realistic and still got a reaction. I really enjoyed it in terms of, like, its construction.
Do you know what I enjoyed? No one climbed a ladder slowly.
Yeah.
You know when you have a ladder match and 2 minutes in, someone's climbing it like they've never climbed a ladder before. I want someone to win a ladder match within the first minute.
It's the first time they've ever had 6 non-asthmatics in a ladder match. Tell you what,
very good.
I'll tell you what, you want the best ladder match of all time, you stick that inhaler above the ring.
Yeah, man.
That'd be good.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
But I enjoyed it a lot. Side note, having seen the WWE NXT North American title up close, it's got the same font as the Progress title on it in a couple of places. Just noticed it. Has, I believe. No, the Cruiserweight one hasn't. You've got a Cruiserweight title belt over there. Have you been robbing champions?
I don't want to discuss that at this point.
Okay, good.
All I'm saying is I've got a lot of friends in a lot of places.
Good.
I know a lot of GMs.
Number 7. Shinsuke Nakamura's new thing is punching people in the nuts.
Not just punching them in the nuts, but
fireman's carrying them, because he hits them so hard he turns into a fireman.
Becoming one with them.
Lovely velour trousers, I thought he had for WrestleMania.
Lovely.
I thought he was just going to rub his thighs. And then, you know, exactly. Goldberg.
So, I enjoyed the match at WrestleMania. I think a lot of people expected it to be like their New Japan match, which it was not.
No.
But it was still good. At that point, the crowd were tired, and you could tell. But the crowd really reacted to Shinsuke turning. Now, Shinsuke is a heel. is the absolute best. His new music is not as good. Let's get that out of the way.
I like
But isn't that the point?
I know, it is the point.
And also, it's still a banger.
Besides, kids, the beauty
bit of JML for kids.
The beauty of rap in a language you don't understand is it can be about anything you want it to be about. For me, Nakamura's music is just telling me what a good person I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen a few people use the graphic of Johnny Cage's move in Mortal Kombat, where he does brutality. The splits and just punches people in the nuts.
My favourite meme has been the guy shooting the person in the chair. And it being the person with the gun is Nakamura, the person in the chair is AJ Styles, and the payoff is just, I don't speak English, which is maybe laugh. Because that's a thing as well. I love it. It's fun. It's different. Again, in the same way I remember when Sami Zayn turned, and I was like, oh, I'm going to hate this, because Sami Zayn's the most lovely man in the world ever. And the fun that we've all had with Sami Zayn doing his little thing. So I think it makes Shinsuke.
Also, Nakamura different. Was a heel for a long time in Japan.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So
sure.
Chaos were a heel stable before
being
in a stable in Japan just meant that you had friends rather than a heel or face dynamic.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it adds new life to him. Because, again, it was that. It felt like, you know, even with the run-up with that match, I think, you know, logically breaking it down, the reason why people had expectations of it being the New Japan match, you know, number two, was because they were selling it like, oh, this is just going to be a really good wrestling match between two really good people, and it was. But having that bit at the end, I think, gave it more coming out of the event.
WrestleMania as well is not... WrestleMania in a stadium is not the place to have a five-star wrestling match. WrestleMania in an arena is.
No, sorry.
Let me explain this, right? I'm not saying you can't have a five-star wrestling match at a WrestleMania in a stadium. You can.
Yeah.
But it's not the place to shoot to have one. Because if your aim is to just have a five-star wrestling match at WrestleMania, it could go over a lot of the fans' heads. Because depending on what cities it's in, there might not necessarily be as into wrestling as they could be.
It's five-star match in the... just blinker down and just wrestle.
Yeah.
Sense. Okay.
What I'm saying is, if your goal is to have a five-star match that everyone raves about being the best match of all time, you will struggle in a stadium unless a lot of what draws people in is the razzle-dazzle of the match. Because, again, there's probably 40,000 massive hardcore wrestling fans in that stadium, and then a lot of people, the further towards the back you go, especially in the cheap seats, they're given... They're sold cheap to local people to fill the stadium, because obviously when something's in your city, you want local people to get to it. It was the same in Orlando. When I was in Orlando for WrestleMania last year, everyone sat around me, like, people didn't understand much about wrestling. The only people they knew were Roman Reigns and John Cena. They didn't know anything else. And that's the thing you've got. Again, it's a big entertainment product. That match at a smaller pay-per-view in a stadium with only 13,000 people in it, or an arena with 13,000 people in it, you can do much more.
That's true.
What I meant, rather than you, because you can obviously have a five-star match in a stadium.
Of course, especially if you're called Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, it's just a lot harder.
It certainly is.
Yeah,
and do you know what thing that I like most as well is that old Shin, he's one of the lads. He's subvert, you know, the knack. He's
switch your music.
I forgot my point. Congratulations. He's changed, hasn't he?
Yeah,
he's changed.
Mainstream.
He's subverted. Sorry, you let me remember again.
Yeah, cool.
He's subverted the old, because every time a Japanese wrestler comes, it's now hack. To say immediately that Vince is going to turn someone into a stereotype, to the point where, so Nakamura comes in, everyone's going, well, they're going to give him the Orient Express theme, and he's going to be throwing salt in people's eyes, and he's now subverting that by being the heel that clearly speaks English, clearly knows what's going on, is just going, I'm being a dick.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I think as well, if let's be honest, if your whole gimmick is that you're a rock star slash artist, you're absolutely allowed to be a bell end.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, some rock stars, I'm sure, are lovely people. But a common rock star trait is to be an arse.
Mm.
So all he's doing is being a dickhead, egotist, and it's wonderful. And I'm excited to see where it goes. Also, I thought their match in Jeddah was good as well. I know people went, oh, win a double count out. Sometimes matches have to. Just all get over that, shall we? That's the joy of wrestling. If every match had ended in a clean victory for one side or the other, it would be really boring. You need controversy to talk about. Right, number six. Asuka loses.
Didn't see that coming.
So, I really enjoyed that match. That match was great. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I was talking to a guy who sat in the row behind me and was like, and he loved the match, but he said, I don't understand why they've had her lose. And my argument there was, I think, like, an undefeated streak is often, it's a bit of a millstone around your neck, isn't it?
Mm.
Because eventually you got to lose. So now, in theory, they can concentrate on Asuka's character rather than her character just being, she's not lost yet.
Yeah.
I also think that if you're going to lose to anyone, losing to Charlotte is not a slight on you. Charlotte is wonderful, but for Asuka to go like 600 days without losing or something ridiculous like that is crazy. Thought the match was great. Were you surprised that Asuka lost?
I was surprised.
I was surprised that she lost. I understand why, but I was surprised.
Yeah, no, I was surprised, but much like you again, I kind of was like, okay, well, she's lost now, so that's okay.
The world keeps turning.
It does, and like she broke, you know, the Goldberg thing and did her own thing and carved out a really big, you know.
And let's not forget how Goldberg lost. Goldberg lost to the head booker of WCW at the time. Like,
this is it. I think as well. Like, I think
she lost in a spirited competitive contest.
And she's so much more than that as a character and a wrestler. Like, this was my favorite match of the show.
Hmm.
As an actual wrestling match.
Yeah.
This is my favourite match. I thought it was brilliant. I genuinely thought both of them just showed just how good they are and how they are, two of them, two huge players in that environment. So long gone are the days of, you know, yesteryears and the perception of that women's division, because that was genuinely fantastic. From their entrances to the actual wrestling match to everything they did was,
and being in the stadium at the time, like the reaction that match got in the stadium was one of the loudest mm-hmm. of the show, partly because it was earlier on when people were still super mm-hmm. up for it. But Charlotte's entrance was brilliant, Asuka's entrance was brilliant, everything about it was really good. And I agree with you, I think it's not, we'll get to it, it's not my favourite match on WrestleMania, on the WrestleMania show, but I think from a technical standpoint, it's the best.
Yeah.
Like, it was fantastic. I mean, Chris, how did you feel about Asuka losing? Were you?
I like being surprised. I mean, that's the thing. It's kind of nice because everyone had their own sort of story written in their head about how it was going to play out.
Mm.
A lot of people, obviously Asuka's going to win it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Carmella's going to cash in or something's going to happen or this is going to happen. But it's one of those moments where it goes, well, I didn't expect that because it was so simple. You kind of write all these stories in your head, but sometimes it's just as simple as that.
Yeah.
And it got a genuine, like, wow from everyone. Everyone was surprised.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, 30 streak ending wow, but it was a real kind of, wow.
Yeah.
It felt like you were there. If WrestleMania, Showcase of the Immortals, pop culture phenomenon, if that's about delivering these moments, then that's a moment that people are going to remember.
Good. Succinctly put. Well done. I mean, it was great. Like, it was a fine match. I was shocked at Asuka losing, but again, there's nothing wrong with being shocked. And also, she lost in a really competitive match.
Mm.
And everyone comes out of it looking good. Asuka comes out of it looking great because she was still great in that match. She was still undefeated for fucking ever in a thing where no one goes undefeated for that long. And she was beaten by someone who is very good and has been pushed accordingly. She wasn't beaten for the, you know, 30 seconds for the sake of, you know, wasn't the honky tonk man when he was a Continental champion. You know what I mean? It wasn't that at all. So good.
Shinsuke Takamura.
Nice.
Number five. The WrestleMania main event. How do we all feel about it? Now, I'll let you into my little story. I did not enjoy the WrestleMania main event when I was watching it live, not because of anything that was going on in the ring, but because of aforementioned dickhead sat behind me, who, as soon as the match started booing, chanting same old shit, wasn't watching the match, because the match wasn't boring.
No.
Right, if you don't like people doing their finishes, then all right. If you absolutely hate that, then fine. But I had to go and watch that match again that night on the network, so I'd actually seen it. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't see it, because I was so just full of rage for this one dickhead who'd just gone, no, I don't like Roman Reigns. And he just kept saying, they're going to put the title on Roman, boo, and every time he kicks out something, boo. And then at the end, when Lesnar won, he looked perplexed. He looked like he'd not quite understood what he'd done with himself for the last 15 minutes of his life.
I think we've just explained how Trump got in. You see that moment of cognitive dissonance at the end?
So, and he, all the time, he's like, he kept nudging people around and going, Reigns is definitely going to win. Reigns is definitely going to win. I may, when Lesnar won, have turned around and gone, ha ha, fuck you, dickhead. I might have done that because he was so annoying. Like, you allowed your own opinion. He stopped that thing, there's kids around and stuff, and he was swearing constantly, and
wasn't a nice atmosphere.
No, because obviously you were sat near him as well, and he was an arse of the highest order.
He was a massive bellend.
And also, if you come to WrestleMania with a beach ball because you don't like one wrestler in particular, fuck off and don't come to WrestleMania ever again. I think I speak for nearly every wrestling fan in the world. And this guy loved the beach balls. Oh, I love the beach balls, which instantly means
I want to know who found out that Roman Reigns has got a fear of beach balls. That's not. Is that on Wikipedia? Under his personal life. Fear of beach balls.
So I had to go back and watch it again. Watching it again, is it the match of the night? No. Is it a historically brilliant main event for a WrestleMania? No. Is it a perfectly good and incredibly brutal match? Yes.
Yeah.
Because Brock Lesnar fucking kills him. He, I believe at one point, in the words of Mark Henry's music, he got his wig split.
Wow.
So, it was... Whew, it was brutal.
It was an incredibly physical match. And it was But being sat near where you were, I was so... I mean, it didn't help by that point that I was knackered, that my knee had started hurting, because I defy anyone to sit in one of those seats for 7 hours.
And we were in fairly comfy seats.
No, terrible, but I mean, you're still... Yeah. I had to get up and wander around a bit. But the fact that there were people there who had decided already...
That's the thing. They decided to be dicks before... They wouldn't give the match a chance. And that's the thing that really wound me up. Like, if 5 minutes into a match, you hate it, fine. But they decided upon entrances that they hated the match. And in some people's cases, I think they decided they wanted to make the match like Lesnar-Goldberg at WrestleMania 20, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think people had decided they wanted to make it like that. And they wanted to throw beach balls around, and they wanted to boo everything. And they wanted to not pay attention to it. And they wanted to chant disrespectful stuff to both competitors. And in reality, Roman Reigns was getting murdered for our entertainment. He was getting elbowed in the head by a man who looks like a more frightening Raoul Moat. Like, that's what was happening in the ring in front of us. There was blood everywhere, and people were still... When people saw the blood, the atmosphere did change from boo to... Oh, hang on a minute.
I mean, we basically lived through a live snippet from Thor Ragnarok, didn't we?
Yes. It was genuinely brutal. I went back and watched it again and was like, you know what, that was good. And I wish I'd got a chance to enjoy it more in the venue. But again, just people who just decide. When I was leaving, a guy came up to me and nudged me and went, you should watch New Japan, it's loads better than this. And I said to him, like, some New Japan's brilliant, mate, but there's a lot of six-man tag matches that mean nothing. And he went, fuck you, and walked off. And I'm like, so you've come up with your own argument. If you like New Japan more than you like WWE, that's absolutely fine. But don't tell me that every New Japan show is better than WrestleMania, because it is not.
So he paid money.
Yeah.
To WrestleMania.
And was wearing a WrestleMania hat and WrestleMania t-shirts as well. Nice one. He bought a ticket. Was wearing tons and tons of merch, and had stayed till the end. That's the other thing. It took me 3 hours to get out of fucking car park at the end of WrestleMania. If you hate that main event
much, I was long gone.
If you then leave. If you hate it that much, why are you still here? Why are you here to complain about something? And I know it's something we bring on the podcast all the time. If you don't like wrestling, stop watching wrestling. There's loads of people who love it. Like, we love it, and most of you guys listen to this. I'm certain if you're listening to this podcast that spent 2 years, and we've been going for over 2 years now, 2 years being super positive about wrestling, you probably love wrestling.
Generally takes about 2 years to go mainstream, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But the amount of people who love wrestling, like, if you don't like, you don't have to like everything on the show. Did I like everything on WrestleMania? No. Did I like the show in general? Yes. Why? Because it's fucking WrestleMania, mate.
It was immense fun.
Right, it's fun. It's WrestleMania. Did I like TakeOver more? Yeah, but TakeOver's more to my sensibilities as a wrestling fan, and I know that. But one day, I want to take my son to WrestleMania, because when he's like six, WrestleMania will be the coolest thing he ever sees. And again, people are forgetting the difference between
And he'll be Braun Strowman's tag team partner.
Braun Strowman's tag team partner should be his dad, who is, of course, Braun Strowman, but with white beard.
Braun Strowman's new gimmick is like the guy in Oliver Twist with all the urchins. That's his new gimmick.
Nice.
Fagin. That's his name. Fagin. Braun Fagin. Come on, you cutties.
That is his real accent. When he says country strong, he's from Hertfordshire.
All right. Want to get these hands?
Next. These ends, they've been pickpocketing. Number four, Daniel Bryan returns. Meaning I had to edit quite a lot of my book.
No one ever thinks of the little guy, do they?
No. I think when they announced it, because it probably came out of the blue, and I know, because I read the Wrestling Observer, people have been talking about him, trying to get cleared for a while. But I was still, there's very few surprises in this world anymore. That was one of the loveliest surprises.
What a nice day that
was. Birthday and Christmas come up once.
It was. It was joyous. It was.
And he looked, as always, he looked great. And he's looked great ever since. He was obviously spent 72 minutes in the greatest Royal Rumble the other day as well, which is good on him. Like, I am very interested to see. I mean, if they're letting him do 72 minutes in a Battle Royal, where he took a load of bumps as well, I'm fairly sure that, I mean, they eased him in a little bit with his match at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. But one would presume now we're going to get to see loads of mad shit dream matches that we all wanted to see that we didn't ever thought we'd saw.
It's great, isn't it?
What would you most like to see from a Daniel Bryan match slash feud over the next few months? What would you most like to see?
Is that in terms of what I think?
No, what would you like to see? Not what you think. I think what we think is going to happen is him and The Miz.
Well, that's what I want
to
see.
Yeah, yeah. See, for me, I'd love to see him and Pete for that UK title, just because I think that would be just insane. Like, I've got loads of insane matches, like him.
Well, I've used my favour on Cassius Ohno. Like, you tell me that now.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, should have told you. Him and Cesaro would be wonderful, even if it was just a match.
Him and AJ would be great.
Him and any of the 205 lads would be fun.
Him versus AJ versus Samoa Joe in my Ring of Honor dreams have come true.
Yeah, like,
about 10 years.
Him and Nakamura would be great. It's like there's so many that it'll just be so. I think that's what's great about it. It's like whatever he does, it's going to be good. And I think the problem that people are going to have is that you know, people are going to have this idea of, oh, wouldn't that be great? But it's that thing of, well, he's an asset to a very big company. So they have to think of him as an asset. So if that means that they're going to put him in a program with big casts to bring big casts up to a level, then that's what they're going to do. He's still a WWE employee. And as much as we'd love to see, oh, that indie dream match that happened to Chikara X amount of years ago, you've got to be realistic with it as well. But I agree with Chris, like him and The Miz would be fantastic because he's been coming for so long. But I think it's just wonderful to have someone back that cares so much about wrestling, and it was just such a, it felt so important for him to do. And I think that really came through. And I think it's wonderful to have someone with that genuine passion to be back in it. So whatever he does, I think I'll just be happy. Just as long as he's happy and he's healthy, then I'm happy.
It's going to be interesting to see where it goes, because I don't think...
Deonna Kebabso.
What?
Deonna Kebabso. Deonna Perazzo, but Deonna Kebabso.
No.
Sorry.
No.
Fine. Carry on. Sorry, Chris.
Thank you. It's all right. I mean, you're trying.
No. I'm struggling with this one. It's hard.
It's hard, isn't it? I think they're going to struggle in the sense that nothing's going to get close to his WrestleMania 30 moment unless it does. You know, unless something else happens. Because he's had that moment. He's been there. But what was interesting was just thinking about how him and Paige have kind of had opposite lives. Yeah.
Mm.
So we went like, so WrestleMania 30, you know, 2014, it was kind of the beginning of the end for Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
And then, but Paige has suddenly become on the ascendance. And then to have him return and her retire, essentially, you know, to the point where they could swap jobs, not literally, I mean, he wasn't straight into the women's division, but it's how quickly things can change.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing about it is I genuinely had set it in my head that I'd never see him wrestle again.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Likewise.
And he is one of my favourite ever wrestlers. So the fact that I now get to see him wrestle again is the absolute greatest.
Oh, well, that's the fact that I sort of went to SmackDown in New Orleans, not really expecting much of anything other than generally just a fun show. What do I get? AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan.
Yep.
Cool, that'll do.
Which did end because of dick punching, is that correct?
Of course.
Yeah. it's cause of end, dick punching. Number three in me 10 things to talk about is arguably the greatest debut in professional wrestling history, featuring Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey, Kurt Angle against Stephanie McMahon and Triple H was... So, in my head, I was like, this is... I never thought it was going to be bad because Kurt Angle and Triple H are in it.
Yeah.
I thought, I don't know how it's going to go because it's someone making their first ever... having their first ever match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even wrestled a dark match somewhere. Like, first ever match in a stadium with nearly 80,000 people in at WrestleMania. Oh my God, how's this going to go? And then there were people speculating it could have been the main event and stuff like that. Went on fourth. Everybody around me was so invested in that match, including me. At one point, I remember grabbing Glenn's knee because I was so invested in it. I think it was watching Triple H sell some punches in a corner.
Oh, yeah.
Where he looked like he's been killed. And he may well have been being killed. It was wonderful. It was such a good match. And I think it was Meltzer's highest rated match on the show, which he's got like 4.5 stars, which I think makes Ronda Rousey's had the best rated debut match in wrestling history.
I mean, that's like 10 stars anywhere else under that, you know.
It's honestly was, first of all, has there ever been a better debut match? Now according to Meltzer on this, the highest ranked debut match he'd ever given until that point was Jun Akiyama's debut match in All Japan, which I think was against Misawa.
Oh,
so,
all right, yeah.
But this was ranked. This was a quarter of a star higher. Now, again, my expectations were this will be fine. It's a little bit of celebrity fun.
It'll be entertainment. We've had the entertainment. It's like Miz and Maurice versus Cena and Nikki last year.
No, what we got was, it was genuinely badass.
Yeah.
And Ronda Rousey has managed to transition the how good box office she was in UFC into her position in WWE. How the future will hold, time will tell. I mean, I think she's doing the Raw and SmackDown, the Raw show. At the O2 in a couple of weeks, so she's coming to the UK. She's clearly on the road and taking this seriously and doing it full time. But can we think of any debut match that is comparable to that? And it needs to be someone's first ever match, not a debut in a company. So first ever wrestling match. I don't think anything comes close.
Yon Akiyama versus. No.
I mean, were you there to see a young man called Delirium at one point?
Oh my goodness me, no.
Was this him?
Yes.
Oh fuck. When were you called Delirium? Oh, wow. And were you a big fan of Delirious?
Well, to be fair, things could only get better.
We were a big fan of Special K. So we had stupid names.
Both the cereal, the drug, and the staple.
Yeah. mainly the cereal, though, because we did wear red.
Yeah. Is there gluten in that?
I was 16 at the time.
Now it all makes sense.
Honestly, I can't think of. For like impact, maybe The Undertaker, but I'm guessing The Undertaker again. It's like, well, no, because he's wrestled in WCW and that's it.
Tweet us at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. Better. And it has to be their actual. It can't be their debut in a company. It's their debut. Ever match.
I'll tell you what surprised me in a similar fashion was Shane McMahon in his first match, which was against X-Pac at WrestleMania.
But do you reckon, and someone will know this, do you reckon he'd had a dark match here and there or he'd wrestle on a house show?
No, I would guarantee you wouldn't. Because you don't, with certain people, you don't do that with them. You don't put them out there. You don't.
Well, there's no point doing it with Ronda. If she'd been.
Yeah, you don't.
Just a. No slight on anyone else, but if she'd been just a wrestler, she would have been given dark matches.
Of
she would have done an NXT.
But you don't. You
coconut
don't,
show.
Yeah, example. You don't send Ronda Rousey to Largo, you know, to have a match out there. And I can't think of a better one. And the fact that we're clutching at straws to think of good ones. I mean, Snooki did okay in.
There's a rugby player called Jamal Ford Robinson. Who plays, I think, for Bristol in the Premiership now. He used to be a trainee at the Progio. Mm-hmm. His name was Crisis. And his first ever match, he murdered two much smaller trainees. Now, he was playing professional rugby at the time, but he was a second division player, so it wasn't full-time. He's now full. The reason he quit wrestling was to go back to full-time rugby. And he's an England Under-21 international. He's a good friend of mine. He's a big dude. And he... his debut match, where he just killed two dudes, Mark Hendry and someone else he killed, just murdered them. Mm-hmm. And he looked brilliant, and we looked at him and went, I think we found our equivalent of Goldberg. And then 2 weeks later, we're like, sorry, lads, I've got to go play rugby. So that's the only one I can think of with my own, because that was genuinely his first ever match. Mm-hmm. And he was great. That was on a very old Endeavour show before I think we even filmed them.
That was... But you talked about the investment in it, the fact that that everyone was itching for that first tag to Ronda. And as soon as she hit the ring and she just grabbed Stephanie and just hoofed her into the ring. Yeah. Oh, no, there wasn't anyone in there viewing with ironic detachment.
Oh, no.
Unless they had serious emotional problems.
No. Good. Into our last two. Point number two. Titus O'Neil falls on his face. Now, first of all, belated happy returns to Titus O'Neil, who by all accounts seems to be one of the nicest and most beloved men in professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what? If you're going to fall on your face like that, have a sense of humour about it, which he clearly does, and we salute that. In no way are we mocking Titus O'Neil, who seems to be a good dude. But fuck me, I have never laughed at something more in professional wrestling than that. I laugh more at that than the Shockmaster. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen. I watched a GIF of that on loop for an hour.
Yep.
Right? I showed my wife the GIF of this. She watched it for an hour. The bit she enjoyed the most is on one of the GIFs. It looks like you can just see him trying to scramble and get back out of there. I've been working on the night of the Greatest Royal Rumble, so I didn't actually see it live. And so on Saturday morning, we sat and watched just the Battle Royal part of it, partly because our son likes to count down from 10 to which is fun. And also, everyone loves a Royal Rumble, it's brilliant. Who's coming in next? It's a sumo wrestler that no one's ever heard of.
He jiggled so much.
Doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. Not a fucking clue of that. But I know the guys from NXT, so I know Baba Sunday, for example. Yeah. I've met him, like, he's a nice dude. But no concept of who that dude was.
It's the first Royal Rumble with legitimate creator wrestlers in it.
Yeah, it was great.
Someone in the back was going, which bits have we got left? Go.
He was one of the guys who didn't have a name from WCW NWO Revenge. Like, one of the New Japan guys that they weren't allowed to name on it, who just had weird gimmicks. So, like, I love a Rumble anyway, right? This Rumble, great. It was great that the people got to be in it who you weren't necessarily expecting to see. But on commentary, if you've only seen a GIF of it, he comes out about number 42, I think. Go on the network and just watch.
Yeah.
Now, so I have an interesting question. I'm going to ask you guys this in a minute, right? So obviously they've owned it and they've shown it on replay, but the fact that you can hear the commentary team lose their fucking mind is the thing that makes it even better. Because Michael Cole, who is one of the most professional human beings on the planet and a lovely chap, but takes his job really seriously. He's been doing it a long time. The fact that you can hear him crying with laughter is... Corey Graves just immediately going, that's the best thing I've ever seen. And then someone, who one would presume is Vince, making the decision to repeatedly show the replay of it, is brilliant. Do we think, if that had been John Cena, would they have shown the replay?
I reckon so.
Because
I
it
do.
Still
maybe,
would have been funny.
Maybe not as much, but they definitely would have.
Because on Raw, Raw, wasn't it, this week? Yeah. They had a laugh about it.
Yeah.
Shout out to body guy Roy Johnson, who fell on his ass trying to enter a Raw Rumble the other day as well.
It's all happened to us. I think Zach. Is it Zach Gibson that tripped over his own flag at an All-Star show? And it fell off the stage. I'm sure it was Gibson. Elijah, who wrestles for Attack Pro, is another person that likes to fall off stages and fall down a lot.
I've come perilously close to getting my foot caught in the apron and wiping out on the way out of the ring at the start of a show.
It's also, when you watch it back, there's ring supports that are attached to the floor.
Not
die.
There was one ring support, because initially I thought to myself, for whatever reason, that because I know the Future Shot ring has a metal pole in the middle of it, and I just assumed that WWE, using NASA technology, whatever they do, don't need that one. Yeah. And then it wasn't until I watched it back again, I went, if he had been a foot the other way, he would have knocked himself out. Yeah. And someone made a very valid point. I think a lot of people did. What if they'd had the big sort of LED screen on that side?
Oh God,
that would have been Final Destination stuff.
Well, it did. It didn't. So we can laugh at it in the same way that you've been framed, and we could laugh at old people and children falling over. Because that's honestly, and someone's going to hold this against me in 10 years' time. One of my favourite subreddits is children falling over. It's one of the funniest things in the world ever. I was laughing my tits off the other day at a small child in America who had, you know, one of them stands with a baseball, swings to hit the baseball, misses it, hits himself in the back of the head, well, while wearing a helmet, don't worry, and basically falls to the ground. I was laughing my head at that for about an hour.
As a father, I think Jim, you know, doesn't find that as funny.
Well, it's like the Simpsons thing, isn't it? The
baby with a nail gun.
Man breaking hip.
Yeah.
Dog on fire. baby with a nail gun. Aww.
the worst thing about the Titus O'Neil fall is, because I must admit my attention was elsewhere, possibly my phone, possibly a bag of pretzels. I can't exactly remember. But I did look up at everyone else pissing themselves and go, oh shit, I hope I get a chance to see that again.
Yeah.
was wonderful.
Oh, so every conceivable angle.
You were in the room. You saw how badly I was gone.
Oh, we were all. I mean, it was just...
I think you made a good point, though. It's the commentary. The fact that they absolutely full-on corpsed.
Like,
not just a casual ha-ha-ha, like an actual crying of laughter.
Me and the wife, she's honestly... Every now and again, I'll just get the GIFs on my phone because it just pops. So many people have retweeted it. I'll just go to it and just go... She'll just laugh. It's the best. And do you know what, Titus? We've said this. By all accounts, is one of the nicest people in professional wrestling. Good on you for finding so much humour in it and having such a... I hope this is the beginning of a big push for Titus O'Neil now.
Do you know what? I reckon,
genuinely hope it is.
At the very least, it'll buy him a car. You know, it's one of those ones where if they've already got shirts out, they know what they're doing.
I remember with the Shockmaster thing when they made him into a bumbling idiot, like, because the Shockmaster was meant to be his big thing and everyone just went, no. And they made him into a bumbling idiot, which made it at least comic relief. They don't need to do that with Titus, but let's just play off of it. Let's see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Everyone, it's the thing. It's really easy to find sympathy for someone who's fallen on their ass, because every one of us has fallen on our ass and felt stupid. So now, he's one of the most sympathetic characters in WWE, because every single one of us knows he's a nice bloke, and every one of us has fallen on our ass. So we all look at him now and go, do you know what? He should beat Lesnar for the Universal title. Telling you now.
Accidentally trips over.
On a slip and slide.
Yeah.
Right, number one on my list of things I want to talk about. I tweeted about this. When I went to TakeOver, I genuinely feel I went to one of the best wrestling shows I will ever go to. And I also think I saw one of the best wrestling matches I will ever see. Certainly, it is definitely the best wrestling match I have ever seen live. And that is Tommaso Ciampa against Johnny Gargano. It is the Tully Blanchard versus Magnum TA for this generation. It is a work of art. It doesn't matter that it's about 45 minutes long. It is absolutely wonderful. If your sensibility in wrestling is you want to watch people being dropped on the head all the time, then it's maybe not for you. If you want almost the 1980s NWA sensibility of how important moves are and the storytelling, it is a work of absolute art by two of my favourite wrestlers on the planet, two of my favourite people on the planet as well. So it's wonderful. I'll tell you right now, nothing this year, when we do the end of year or Tuesday Night Jaw Awards, nothing is going to beat it for my match of the year, unless something absolutely phenomenal happens. Nothing will beat it. It has everything that I want. It tells an amazing story. It's got great wrestling in it. It's absolutely wonderful. If anyone thinks this is less than a 5-star match, they are wrong. It's the best. Discuss.
Well, I've said everything. I think the big thing for me, like on a personal level, is I was so wrong about both of them, because a few years ago I looked at both of them and just went, I don't get it. I was like, they're just not for me. Maybe a little less so with Ciampa, because obviously he spent a little bit of time in Progress and I saw him a little bit more up and close and personal. But I remember when they first came into NXT, I was like, all right, okay, I guess. And I was so happy to be wrong about when they became tag team champ, or not tag team champions, became a tag team and had them tag team matches. And I think for me, sitting, watching that match, I'm always delighted when I'm wrong, because it's one of my favourite things in the world ever to go, no, I was. But it was phenomenal. It was just brilliant, and it did everything and gave you everything that you could hope and desire for. I think it was fantastic. I don't think I have anything more to add other than Ranallo going full, like, turbocharge Ranallo mental.
He was sat near us. Him and his brother were sat near us at WrestleMania. He's a good dude. That documentary about him looks amazing.
Oh, it looks phenomenal. I'm so excited about it. Like,
cause... I still haven't seen the Andre the Giant one.
No, I haven't yet.
There's no real way to watch it in this country.
No.
And when it was on in America, I was busy and I couldn't see it. It was on HBO. Yeah. And I had HBO in my hotel, but I was out and I couldn't see it.
Look, if by some by some weird force of nature or someone listening to this, we have got the Birmingham Film Festival coming up. And if you have got anything to do with that Ranallo, like, documentary, holler at Dale, because I would absolutely love to see it there. And mainly purely based on the fact that I'm being selfish and want to be able to sit down with Ranallo and tell him how amazing he is. So, but yeah, it just felt like a proper main event. Like,
it made sense.
No, get out.
Have I gone too far now?
I've gone too far.
What sort of investing in time and making everything make sense and just one thing leading to another and genuine emotion and making bad things work for you. I think that's the thing I'm taking away from it, because Ciampa was hurt.
Mm.
And would it have been, here's a question for you, would it have been as good if it had gone down the route where it probably would have gone down, where they maybe had the match a couple of months later last year?
Oh, no. I mean, the way they built it has been amazing. And there's something powerful in using someone who cannot wrestle to build an angle. My company's doing it at the minute with Eddie Dennis. And there's something very powerful about using it. And the fact that he vanished and then came back, the fact that when he came back, he didn't look like the same Tommaso Ciampa as in a tag team. He looked like, and this is the phrase I used to describe when I was in the States, he looked like a Vietnam veteran. Because he was wearing camouflage, he was on a crutch, like, massive beard and everything. Like, he looked like he was haunted by his experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of character work that's gone into building him, because Johnny's he's a wrestler, he's dead good at wrestling, and he's happy, and he's got a lovely wife, and it's great. And then you've got bitter, twisted Tommaso who feels left behind. That storytelling in its own is brilliant. The bit near the end where we could use his crutch on him and he doesn't. And Tommaso covering it. Oh, it's so good!
I genuinely thought, a little part of me thought, are they just going to make up?
Yeah.
Because that would have been...
Just put his arm around him.
Just...
I thought that as well. I was like, they're gonna
make up. That would have been... Could they? Would they? You know, it would have been... part of me would have loved that to happen, just to see what would have happened in the stadium at that point, what would have gone on in the arena. But just... I love the fact that sometimes, especially any kind of creative process, the urge to be as in control as possible of everything is... It can be... stifling. You think you're pushing things in the right direction, but sometimes relinquishing control, just accepting that shit will happen that you have no control over and making the best of it, will often lead you to places that you never thought of for yourself.
I think so my brain's sort of been going while we've been having this discussion. I think this match is proof that this generation has been treated in a manner of, it's either been treated with acceptance or dismissal, in the sense of, oh, you're ruining the thing that we loved and you don't treat it in the same way, and I miss the 80s and I miss this and I miss that and blah blah blah. This match is proof that if you give two people a platform, they will absolutely show you what they can do. Because Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, before they were in NXT, were the biggest indie wrestlers in the world ever. And they still do moves that, you know, old schoolers are going, oh, why is he not doing a hip toss or whatever? They are, but they used such a beautiful modern method to tell an age-old story.
Yeah.
And it made us all go, oh, that's amazing. Now, the problem is, it's like, did they ever have the opportunity when they were working for Evolve or Shikara or all these other companies? Probably not, but it's about saying to this, I get so bored and tired of everyone going, oh, it's not like it used to be, or not like it used to be. And I say to that, fucking good. Because do you know what? There was a period of time where wrestling was dog shit and it was thought of as lowbrow and treated with just general disdain. And now look where we are. We've just had one of the biggest weekends in this whole sports history. And one of the best matches was the main event of a show headlined by two of the most obscure indie wrestlers of
of, you know, recent years. And I think that's to be applauded, and I think that needs to be encouraged and continued. You know, look at the main roster. Like, everyone's wrestling like an indie wrestler because they're all bloody indie wrestlers. Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins on Raw last night was amazing. But it's because they've given them the creative freedom and they've accepted that there is a new generation coming. And you have to embrace it. And if you don't want to embrace it, that's absolutely fine. But don't stand in the way of progress. You're welcome.
Look at that. I love it when he gets all passionate and ranty, isn't
it? Yeah, man.
I kind of tune out.
Anyway, what we're saying is, it's a great match.
Also, can I just take a moment to wish a very happy birthday to Dave Taylor.
Oh yeah. It is Big Dave's.
It is Dave birthday. Taylor's birthday. Yeah. Happy birthday, Dave. I'd love to have Dave Taylor as a Tuesday night Jaw Meets guest.
And as a tribute to him, I will say only, Ooh Betty.
Ooh Betty.
Anyway, that's our little mini rant. We've come in under 2 hours. I'm delighted.
Yes.
And the first 20 minutes was just us talking bollocks.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
The rest of it was us talking bollocks. Thanks, lads. Once again, May 13th, Stockport Town Hall, Future Shocks, Big Show, which is not this weekend, the weekend after. This weekend, Super Strong Style 16, which I'll be at, Matthew will be at. Christopher won't. Because, you know.
Got to make a living.
Where you work, what you do gigs this weekend?
I've got it's a good question. Where am I? I'm in Didsbury.
Nice.
On Friday.
Class. Which walking is brilliant.
Distance. Yeah. Walking distance. I mean, I won't. I'll still drive.
Yeah.
Because fuck the planet. Someone has to balance all the vegans in Didsbury. And on Saturday, I'm in Leeds.
Nice.
In a cellar.
Less nice. I have a gig.
Follow me at the Brooker Man, and I will take photos of the other people and tell you how funny they are.
I'm gigging in Sheffield on Friday night, and then I've got Super Strong Style the weekend.
It's the lovely last laugh at City Hall, isn't it?
It is. And then next week, I've been summoned to my publisher. I think they're already fed up with me, and they're probably cancelling the book. It's probably not it. Probably got to do PR stuff, but you know. Matthew, where are you on socials?
M Richards Host on Twitter. Yeah.
Apparently Instagram's more important than Twitter now, which is ridiculous because I've got way more Twitter followers than Instagram followers.
Are they going to do a big promotional cardboard cutout of you holding the book?
I sincerely hope so.
Oh, God,
for
I do.
For vandalism purposes.
Yeah.
Can I have it?
I mean, I'm going to... If I have one, I'm going to secretly sneak into Matthew's room one night and fill it with, like, 200 of them. When he stands up, he has to. It's a bit like Takeshi's Castle.
Well, joke's on you, Jim, while I wank myself to sleep.
Like you do now.
This is.
Yeah, but I won't be crying this time, so.
So, if anything, I make your life better.
Stop making it more positive. Stop it.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Back next week. More stuff. I don't know. I'll probably interview someone over Super Strong Style weekend. That's probably what I'll do. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Matthew. Thanks for waiting for the podcast, because I'm sorry I didn't have one last week. I was on a plane. But we'll see you next week. All right, thanks. Bye.
Hashtag mainstream.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.